We're moving to agenda paper number 14.
Thank you very much, Wayne. Good morning, everyone. The next topic is agenda paper 14, accounting for the net proceeds and cost of testing on PPNE. The interpretation committee received a request to clarify accounting for net proceeds received during the course of the testing PPE. One of the costs included in PPE is cost of testing whether the asset is functioning properly. If the testing cost is higher than testing proceeds, it is clear that testing proceeds should be deducted from testing cost in accordance with the paragraph 70E of IS 16. However, it is not clear when the testing proceeds exceed testing cost, how the excess portion should be accounted for. We conducted outreach to regulators, national standards setters, and accounting firms. Due to the timing, I'm sorry, but I could not include the outreach results on the paper, and let me already update now. We received 15 responses on the outreach. Most of the respondents stated that they are not aware of cases in which testing proceeds materially exceed testing costs. However, three respondents noted examples of testing proceeds exceeding cost of testing, particularly in the extractive industries. One respondent also noted examples in entities that have manufacturing process that use complex equipment. Two of the respondents noted that some diversities in practice exist. One of them noted that the prevalent approach is that sales proceeds are netted against the asset cost, although the testing proceeds exceed cost of testing. The staff recommendation is that the interpretation committee should not take this issue onto its agenda, because if we literally read the paragraph 70E, it is written that testing proceeds should be deducted from testing cost, and the proposed wording for tentative agenda decision is written on that basis. So the question to the committee member is if the committee member agree with the staff recommendation. Thank you very much.
Just as additional background, this issue originally came to the Emerging Economies Group.
Exactly.
And in that conversation, the clear consensus of that group was there's no way you get to net off an excess of proceeds against fixed assets. So there's no way that's going to happen. Some of them questioned whether or not that was just a way of disguising what should have been an impairment breakdown. Take 2 years worth of sales and net them off against your fixed assets, they're not impaired anymore. But that kind of an underhanded way to do it in some of their views. I say that was the, I didn't hear any disagreement with that around the Emerging Economies Group discussion. Comments? Reactions? Andrew?
I don't think this needs to be added to the agenda, but I don't agree with the staff analysis. I think if we are generating revenues income as a result of activities necessary to bring an asset into its location and condition intended by management, etc., those will be netted off to the full extent of the cost of the asset, not the net would not be limited to the cost of the testing. I think that is, from what I've seen, general practice in things like the extractive industries where there might be material income whilst you're still in the development or construction phase. And I think the analysis here treats the testing phase as a separate unit of account, in effect. The unit of account is the asset, not the testing phase. So I think we need to work on the wording of the agenda decision, but I think an agenda decision is the right way to go.
You like the approach, but you hate the answer. Reinhardt?
Well, my views are very similar to those of Andrew. As Andrew indicates, I think the focus of the paper seems to be that testing is a separate activity from the activity necessary to bring the asset in, capable of operating in a management in a way management intended, and so what we've observed, particularly in the mining and other extractive industries, is the proceeds can exceed direct costs of testing, and practice tends to be to net that on the, from the perspective that I don't think IS 16 paragraph 17 is clear in that sense. We also as a firm have published guidance that suggests that that is acceptable because the focus is on getting the asset capable of operating in a manner intended by management. And so, as I say, I agree that we don't need to take it on our agenda, but like Andrew, I don't agree with the analysis that is done in the conclusion.
Tony?
I also agree that it shouldn't come on the agenda. I think our sense is very similar to Reinhardt's, that there are circumstances where it happens. It's not very often, if ever, something that's material, but that the prevalent practice, and there's, I think, quite a lot of guidance from different sources out there that says you would take any credit that arises against the cost of the asset as a whole. And my sense of paragraph 17 is you could read it two ways. You could, if you just focused on subparagraph E, say that the cost of testing less the proceeds is an item that gets capitalized if it's a debit, and if it's a credit, it goes off to P&L. But if I read the paragraph as a whole, examples of directly attributable costs, I could probably say, well, if it turns out to be a credit, that's odd, but it's a directly attributable credit, and it goes against the cost of the assets. I think I could read it that way as well. And where I'm going with it all is sort of given that there's not a lot of diversity, I don't think, it's not very often material. Do we want to push a lot of people into making a change with an agenda decision? So I see how the staff reads it. I think I could read it the other way, and I just wonder if we want to force a change in practice.
Bruce?
I guess I haven't really made up my mind on the agenda decision, but what I will tell you is that pretty much I was going to make the same comment. I mean, I don't think the wording is clear at all. I think without a doubt you could read it two ways. And I guess the challenge I would put is, I mean, if we're sitting here saying we clearly can see that the standard gives us two different answers, we've got to be careful, because I think what we're doing is we've got to accept that the agenda decision then is going to push a change in accounting. I mean, it's got to, and I accept it doesn't arise often, but it may not be as widespread, because it clearly happens in certain industries like the extractive. But this is definitely something that we know is going to create a diversity in practice. It's not a, you know, I guess that's my question around saying, well, if we're happy to push it off as an agenda rejection, well, that's fine, but we've got to understand that that will force a change in accounting. And if we know that that's going to be the consequence of not doing it, aren't we then saying, well, then we know that there's a diversity in practice created because the wording doesn't work? So I guess that's just the bit I think we need to consider.
Laurent?
I'm like the others. I acknowledge that it's not a huge, widely often met issue. But I think that if we are dealing with a situation where testing is necessary to bringing the item of PP&E to the location condition necessary for it to be capable of operating the manner intended by management, and that's a crucial judgment to be made, then I don't see how you can use paragraph 21 to justify that the excess should be recognized in P&L. Because paragraph 21 implies when it is not necessary to bringing the item of PP&E to the location condition necessary and so on. And also forcing into making that split, you know, between one element that goes against the cost of testing, one element that goes into P&L. operationally, you will have to do it manually, I suppose. So I think it's easier also to do it against the cost of the asset. And there are precedents, because if you take decommissioning liabilities, you know, when you have changes in the decommissioning liability, sometimes when you have a decrease, the decrease goes offsetting the cost of the asset, and it may go beyond the amount of the decommissioning liability that was put at the beginning, in addition to the cost of the assets. So the decrease might hit, you know, the other cost aspects of the asset. So it's not the first time we see something which will affect the cost of the asset on other elements.
Come in. Just come back on a couple of things people have said so far. I think on the decommissioning, I would see that as being quite distinctly different because we're looking here at proceeds, whereas adjusting a decommissioning liability isn't proceeds. So I wouldn't say that's being the same. Our focus, though, was on paragraph 17 and it being an example of costs. And if you've got a net credit, I don't see how that fits the definition of a cost. And hence why we couldn't see how you could then have net proceeds, a net credit being deducted from the cost of the asset, because it doesn't meet the definition of a cost.
I think you're losing.
I just wondered, Michael, given the way that it is constructed, and I just read it through and said, well, if that number turns out to be a credit, that's a directly attributable cost, and I would deduct it. I think I could perfectly easily read it that way. I could read it the other way as well, but I think I could perfectly easily read it that way.
Okay, we're going to go. Well, we'll keep going around and come back. Is it Charlotte or Cass?
I read this blind because I haven't come across it in practice, and I'm really surprised by what other people say, to be honest, because I find it really hard to read it any other way. And I would read it like the staff said. I can understand that maybe the sensible answer is to read it otherwise, but I can't get there in the words. So if we think that everybody is applying it the other way, and I'm not sure where the diversity is, whether some industries are applying it in the way the staff read and others aren't, or whether everyone is applying it the other way. But I think if that's the case, then I think maybe it needs clarifying if that's allowable. But I can't get there with the words as they are.
John?
I agree with the staff analysis. I also don't agree with others that you can read it, that you can put a credit against the asset. I think that is practice. That is happening in practice. So, but I am troubled by the view that we shouldn't do an interpretation that says what the standard means because it might change practice. We decided yesterday not to do an interpretation on certain tax positions because we thought the standard was clear, even though we acknowledge its diversity in practice. So, it seems to me that the staff analysis here is correct, and we should say so.
Okay, so coming back around, Carl, and then Fei Long.
Yeah, I support staff's conclusion and no amendments to the wording of the agenda decision.
Fei Long?
I can follow the staff argument that I don't think it's the standards is so as clear as what the staff thinks. At least it's not interpreted as clear as you think. And many companies just don't differentiate the cost between those that are capitalized for getting the asset to the location necessary and those are the cost of testing. In practice, the rationale for that is that all the costs are going to the same asset, so they don't just why they differentiate between that.
Okay, so they just. You're saying they don't keep a separate cost center called testing. It's just credit, cash, debit, asset.
No.
Okay. We're kind of exhausting this one. Sandy and then Alan and we'll wrap it up.
I guess I agreed with the staff's analysis. I would echo Charlotte's comments. But what I wasn't clear on is when you reference paragraph 21, are you saying that, just to use this example, the net of the 139 would go to the income statement, or you'd be pulling some of the revenue and some of the expenses out to get to the net of 139? Because when you look at 21, it says the income and expenses.
Right, that's true. Just referring income statement. So that's the That's the reason I just reframed.
So net or gross?
Right, and
it'd be net.
Yeah.
So
the 139 would be income.
That's right.
Okay.
Alan, and then I'm going to pose a question.
Just, I guess, a general comment. When this first came in, we had discussions about this. It seemed the example we were given, you could actually get a negative asset, if that made sense. The extent of the recovery from testing was such that it completely recovered the whole cost of the asset and put the asset into credit. So we're getting quite extreme cases. And what it seemed to me was, I was sitting there thinking, is this about the debit and credit, or is this about the definition of testing? Because it worried me that, really, if you're recovering all of this stuff from testing, it's not really testing. You know, and you've got to, you know, think about somebody growing an orchard in the first year, you know, they're about 60-70% production of apples, and if you pick them all, you make a profit, and the next year it's 80% and so on. And you're sort of just testing the apples are okay for market. So it worried me a bit, but I'm also troubled by what I'm hearing about where practice is. And so, I'm not sure whether rejection's right, but the alternative is rather interpretation. You could actually change the wording here to say the cost of testing to the extent that they are not recovered by sales, for example, and that clearly then caps it, because it would be a practical way of doing it, but I'm troubled that testing is a profitable exercise in this. Well, it's either you give guidance, more testing, or you actually cap it, which is the way some people are interpreting this, is saying the cost is a cost. Once you're below a cost, we're in different territory. And they sort of, I guess, either analogize to 21 or they just assume it's revenue.
Reinhard, absolute last word.
Yeah, the only other comment I was going to make was echoing what Pei Long said, is the analysis focuses on cost, but in the extractive industry, where you're developing a mine, what is the cost of testing? How do you determine that? And so that really puts pressure on the definition of cost. And so as Pei Long said, typically what people do is they say it's part of one unit of account. It's directly attributable to the testing activity. Yes, as you say, there are issues as to when does testing, like what is, are you really in the testing phase or not? Is it capable of production and consistent with some of the discussions that the committee had earlier? But recognizing all of that, the people simply credit the proceeds against the overall cost, because again, part of the issue is what is cost for that asset? How do you determine it? Is it directly attributable? How do you determine the cost of that testing itself?
Okay, let's see if we can simplify this. Because I thought, until about the last four people spoke up, that it was going to be almost a unanimous view, and now I'm not sure what it is. So let's take the example in paragraph 4. And your analysis of what you think the right answer is the one, those who think 139 is a credit to the asset. I think I counted six. Hold your hands up again.
One, two, three, four, five.
Five. Okay. How many think it's a credit in the income statement?
One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine.
Okay. Then it's a credit in the income statement and the agenda decision as written. Let me drop back 10. Agenda decision or some other sort of, you know, fix like Alan suggested. Those who favor an agenda decision?
One, two, three, four, five, six, seven.
Okay. That means we're not going to get either one. So I guess agenda decision passes by default.
Well, it's an exposure anyway.
Point taken.
Diversity of practice will get that back.
Point taken.
But I think you're right, Wayne, because we need a simple majority to add something to the agenda,
right.
So the default must be not to add, which is what an agenda decision is.
Okay. Thank you, Couture. Next.
Thank you very much.
Contestant Hannah, agenda paper 15.